All right, we're in Windows World again. Introduce yourself.
So I'm Dave Fields. I have been working on performance for the last 15 years at Microsoft.
Nice.
I joined from a previous company. And I've been in the performance team for all that time. And
awesome.
Working on different ways of improving the efficiency of the operating system.
Excellent. Hi.
I'm Bill Garagunas. I'm David's counterpart here on the performance team of Windows. The group program manager of the team. I haven't been working on performance as long as David has. Probably about 10-ish years for me, maybe a little bit longer.
Wow.
Multiple releases, web stuff, and doing stuff out in the field.
Excellent. Yeah. So one of the things that I think everybody's noticed since they've been using Windows 7, even the build that we released at PDC08, is that it's a very efficient in a number of dimensions. And so what we've been focusing on in this sort of series of interviews is efficiency from, you know, diagnostics and troubleshooting and performance. So there's this thing called PerfTrack that I kind of wanted to learn about today as part of this conversation. Can you fill us in a little bit?
Yeah, so PerfTrack is part of the effort of what we've been doing in terms of performance. And it allows us to do a couple things. So one is to understand how the system is performing in the field. So we've always been able to run benchmarks, and benchmarks, of course, are not always representative of what users are doing. So it's a very simple way of instrumenting code and important operations within the operating system with a start and stop event, and then being able to take those and squim them back. So there's squims another facility I think you've covered in the past.
Yes, we have.
And so that allows us to get a response time curve.
Okay.
Of what the population looks like. So for the start menu, for instance, we have instrumented around just showing the start menu, around the clicks on the start menu to see what how long it takes to respond to those interactions. And we've done that through about 300 or so different
393.
Points.
393. Okay. Wow. 393. No, I just made it up.
Yeah. it's roughly.
It's roughly around there.
Yeah, 350 different operations.
Excellent.
And so from that, we can kind of drill down and see what users are seeing overall, but also specifically looking at different populations of users. And so this is all, you know, within the customer experience improvement program, so it's all opt-in. And then the other big part of that, once we see response time curves, is we can escalate. And so for users that are seeing poor performance, we can go off and get a performance trace of, you know, it was just kind of
I need a picture of this.
Yeah.
Keep talking.
Okay. Bill's going to crawl underneath the camera.
I think that was our first.
So the performance traces allow us to see what's happening on the operating system for the short period that we want to take a look at. And so those are also a further opt-in. So once we escalate on the system, they also request us to send up a trace, much like the OCA crashes. So,
excellent.
So you can think of PerfTrack as the performance side of something like OCA and Watson are for reliability.
Excellent. Man, this is new, of course, to Windows 7.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although we have been using the facilities internally for about 5 years.
Nice.
So, I mean, as David was talking about, I mean, let's say we took opening up the documents folder over a network. We get one of these back where there's millions of hits when people opt into the customer experience improvement program. And when we see, for example, we expect, you know, we might have a target in terms of where we expect a lot of people to land and an upper limit, but sometimes we see things out here. And when, as David was saying, with the escalations, we can go and drill specifically into what's going on to this group of machines. Why are these ones slow? If it was, like in this case, with the documents folder, maybe this is because it's running over a network, it might be running over a very slow wireless network at home, and therefore, that's causing the documents folder to take a lot longer to open up. But from our perspective, we can basically poke into this curve and try and understand what's going on here and other things that we want to go and fix. And I think one of the biggest value props, my apologies, I'm going to walk in front of you.
No,
one of the biggest value props is it helps direct our resources during the beta time frame, the RC time frame, around the areas that we wanted to go drill into. Because what we've done is we've essentially gone away and put goals around all the key operations in the operating system. So from a responsiveness perspective, that means that you know, are things responding the way we expect them to, and other things that get in the way.
Absolutely. And so let's talk a little bit about the things that perhaps get in the way, right? So if I want to do, a user does some action, it may actually launch an executable that loads in a bunch of DLLs, calls in to a service. You guys are able to know exactly what's happening at all stages, right? So you know that whether or not it's this component that's the problem, or it had to start the service, it was a triggered service, took a little while to fire. I mean, how granular does this stuff get?
Well, sort of. I mean, like, you know, we do that for Windows, right? So the instrumentation points that David was talking about were common things that people do inside Windows. So when we trigger off Windows, we're able to go away and drill into, yeah, what processes are running, what are the threads doing in that process, are there waits that are unexpected, are there things that are waiting on the disk, for example? Does this user have a disk that maybe is not responding quickly enough?
Sure.
But the other thing that it also lets us do, sorry to interrupt, Dave, is what's the impact of antivirus software?
Yeah.
What's the impact of the plugins? I mean, one of the things that a lot of people don't think about is, you know, your antivirus software, I mean that code inserts itself in many different places in an operating system. The IE plugins, as an example as well, those things, every time you open up a tab, you're going away and doing a whole bunch of processing. If somebody's putting something in one of those IE tabs to go off to the network and call home and do an update check on that component, that's happening while the IE tab's in the middle of opening. That has an effect on your experience.
Absolutely.
So basically, we categorize the problems that we see in one of four ways. So the first one is that there's a problem with the implementation or design of the component itself. Something that, you know, so if, you know, early on in the betas, or actually pre-beta, you know, we found lots of different problems where a particular feature would be using some, you know, thing in the OS, and it wasn't particularly designed well. And so we fixed, I think, all of the ones that we found early on in the release. And then, so design of the component, number two is design of something that it depends on. So it might be using an underlying facility that has some issue or was not being used properly. Number three is that there's something like a plugin into IE or antivirus that has a problem that we need to go off and investigate and work with that team on. And then number four is that the system might be overloaded. So, for instance, I mean, you've seen cases where you have a very large workload that's running on a system that is much smaller than it can work on. Mm-hmm. And so we'll see those kinds of issues as well. And so, you know, one of the things that we've been trying to work on recently is, you know, besides reducing footprint of the operating system, is to understand how we can give users a better understanding of when they are over taxing the system with different types of workloads. So,
excellent. Buy more RAM.
Yeah, in some cases. Yeah.
Well, I remember in the Vista time frame is when we introduced the whole, you know, this window is not responding kind of thing.
Right.
And so I have seen less of that in 7, which might have to do with the fact that certain applications are written better, or that the way that you're sensing whether or not something's really not responding is maybe a little bit more finely tuned, but it's definitely related to some degree.
Yeah, absolutely. And so with some of the features in Vista, we've changed the implementation, I think. We've talked about several of those in terms of the WDM 1.1 driver model, where we have reduced the footprint of the desktop window manager or Arrow significantly with the help of some of the vendors. And so that has significantly improved the footprint, which of course improves the responsiveness of the operating system. And you know, a number of those, I think we had like 400 or so bugs.
So, over 500.
Over 500, okay. Where we improved memory issues and memory utilization issues. And so
that's funny, I'm the numbers guy today.
Yeah.
You're usually the numbers guy.
And so that's had a significant impact in there. We've also, you know, a lot of these aren't always resource related. So there are paths in the operating system where we will go off and do a file open, which may go across the network. If that's done in the UI thread, then that will take a while.
Sure.
And those aren't usually that problematic when you're on the same network as that the file server. When you're on a different network, so for instance, you've taken the machine from your corporate environment and take it home, mm-hmm. and you can't access that resource, it's still going to go off and try to do that connection at some point. Mm-hmm. And that might take a long time to time out. So it might be 30 seconds, 20 seconds, something like that.
Yeah.
And so we've moved a lot of those off onto the background or rewritten the component to be smarter about knowing which network it's on. So there are a lot of things like not just the file opens, but other cases like printer opens and so forth that can cause some of those things. And lots of different types of those kinds of things.
That's a good point, too. I mean, like, one of the big focuses we had during the cycle was also around reducing the background noise, the background activity and services that were firing up. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things we have talked about at times is the demand start model that we built into Windows 7. So there are services now that basically sort of trigger on, it's a whole new API,
yeah.
but they trigger on, you know, something's arrived or somebody's inserted a new piece of media in the machine, and that's going to trigger off maybe the EFS service, as an example. So what that means is we don't necessarily have to have a lot of these services running constantly in the background. And I think at the last count was about 27 or so that we trigger started, something like that during the time frame. But that means that less noise, less activity in the background, less resources going on. But also even things just like idle tasks and looking at when tasks are firing up, making sure that those things weren't disruptive to the user. So, for example, the search indexer and Superfetch are very much aware of the user's presence and making sure that, you know what, I'm not going to do work while the user's actually busy on that machine right now, or I'm going to do very, very minimal things mm-hmm. And give that machine to the user for that period of time. And then when there's no one around, then I can go away and do more work on those things.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So now with you guys, so as you were saying, that this is plugged into the whole telemetry system in Windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there anything, like, can we talk about sort of common kind of things that you saw happen in the wild and maybe some uncommon ones that sort of like, wow, you know, do you have any surprises? And then are there just the stuff that you sort of expected?
So, you know, we've been doing this for a number of years internally.
Uh-huh.
And so we've seen a lot of interesting things internally with even third-party software. But I guess it was a kind of a surprise to us, you know, how frequently we saw applications with long-running operations on their UI. Mm-hmm. So we've worked, you know, pretty diligently with a number of teams internally mm-hmm. on trying to reduce that, even in the Vista time frame. But with the more advanced facilities that we have now, and you know, a better culture within the entire Windows team, that we've had a significantly improved experience with Win 7, as we can see from all the customer feedback.
Absolutely. And you guys have gotten a lot of customer feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people have installed it.
Yeah.
So, you know, with the feedback that we've been getting with beta and RC, we've been more sophisticated about being able to understand populations within those curves. And so sometimes we see that, you know, for instance, users with a particular hardware will have a different experience than other users. And so we're just really starting to get into the analysis in a deep way over the last, you know, month or so.
Yeah.
We expect to be doing this for many, many years to go forward.
Well, it's an interesting point that you brought up, a good point about the hardware. The other thing, too, is that with those curves we talked about a little while ago, we're able to turn around now and actually go and segment that population by low-powered machines, low-wind machines, machines with a disk score, the WinEAR disk score, above a certain level or below a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
So we can get very sort of granular now about, okay, let's go target this part of the population, see what the problems are there, and look to see what happens across a variety of curves
mm-hmm.
when you've constrained them down to very specific populations, especially around the lower-end processors nowadays, or machines that are very limited in terms of RAM, especially in terms of, you know, machines that are limited in terms of RAM. You can really find, here are the particular things that, you know, are, you know, memory bound in
mm-hmm.
our brain system. So we can go away and do some rework around those sort of things.
We can do a limited amount of investigation with other configuration information. So,
mm-hmm.
for, you know, if a particular antivirus software is installed or another type of package. And so there's a limited amount that we can do there. But that work is kind of ongoing. So.
Yeah. But it's interesting, I mean, like, just to talk about some of the statistics, I mean, we had billions of data points come back during the beta and RC releases. If you looked at, you know, some of these histograms that we were looking at, they were, you know, we had you know, tens of millions of data points behind them at all times. Amazing. So you get a good view of what's going on there in the marketplace and sort of start figuring out, okay, here are a set of problems we need to go away and attack. Mm-hmm. I mean, essentially, what the system has done for us is it's enabled us to pool our resources and go after the things that we have to go away and fix, mm-hmm. so that we maximize the benefit we bring to the population. And that's really what, you know, we've invested in, and we're going to continue investing in, mm-hmm. into the future around some of our telemetry investments. Mm-hmm. So it's really the customer experience improvement program is, you know, fulfilling its namesake.
Absolutely. Yeah. And now, I mean, so a lot of work has been done sort of outside of what you guys work on, right, in indexing and searching. Right?
We work closely with those teams.
I bet.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's very, very fast. And it's one. I had a question once that I asked somebody on that team was, you know, what would be really cool is if from Windows I could go start, search, and do a Bing search, right? Mm-hmm. And then the response was immediately, well, you know, that doesn't fit into our idea of snappy response times when you try to search on Windows, right? You could write a custom provider, but still, it's just the fact is you guys have a very small margin for making users wait. And that's when you guys are in that business.
And we've worked with the different software teams to really understand more about what they're trying to provide and kind of pair that with the user experience. Mm-hmm. So the UI designers will use different UI design techniques, right, different controls and so forth, in order to display the results in a kind of both a fast fashion, but also, something that's quite usable. Mm-hmm. So you have to be careful about data sources that take a long time to respond. So, you know, obviously, you know, a Bing search with just a small number of results, you know, can return quickly.
Sure.
But if you're doing a search for, you know, across a very large data set, that can be quite long to return, for instance, all the results.
Yes.
And so, and that's some of the issues we had in some of the previous releases. And so that redesign has been useful. So with the PerfTrack stuff, one of the things that we do there is it's not just a start and stop, and that's all you do. Mm-hmm. Really, we have what we call interaction classes associated with that. That's how we set goals.
Yeah.
And so those interaction classes are based upon the UI design. So we have the UI designers using different classes of UI. So, for instance, with a mouse movement or a keyboard input. Those are, you know, we have no way of providing input other than moving the mouse or responding to the keystroke. And so those have to be very fast and very, very annoying if they're not fast. They're not very quick. So, however, if you're doing a file copy, right, we can put up a progress dialog and you know, file copies for very large files are not going to be instantaneous, right? So we have different techniques in order to convey the continuity of the operation. Mm. And so those UI elements are designed with different performance in mind. And so that's how we set the goals. It's not really based upon what the we've done in the past or the capability of the hardware. We design it based upon the UI.
Yeah.
And make sure that that UI design is designed such that it will scale appropriately across a wide range of hardware.
Excellent.
And so we have goals associated with all that instrumentation, and we can you know, when we display one of these response time curves to the developers that are working on that feature, they can see where their goals are, how close they are to meeting them across a wide range of hardware, mm-hmm. and we focus on the priority of improving this based upon that combination of how they're doing across different systems.
And with some of them too. I mean, it was interesting. Once beta was out there, and during the beta time frame, we saw some of these curves back. You know, there was additional UI put into the product in certain instances because it was like, look, you know, here's the reality of where this user interface is at, based on what it takes. And really, architecturally, you know, we're not going to get that down to the instantaneous levels. Therefore, we need to put up additional UI so that the user's got some expectation setting going on. And that in itself is an interesting process too, because we're using the performance feedback loop to also influence the design. And really, at the end of the day, it's important that the user understands what's going on, mm-hmm. and the user's expectations are being met based on those machines.
Absolutely.
So it's funny. In some ways, we're sort of going into sort of new territories, and we're sort of leveraging this massive amount of data that we've got to just improve the overall design and responsiveness and usability characteristics, and that feeling, that hard-to-touch feeling mm-hmm. of responsiveness in Windows.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I mean, Windows has always, you know, been a general-purpose operating system, really general-purpose. I mean, you support thousands and thousands and thousands of configurations, hardware.
Yeah.
And so
billion users, right?
It's so amazing.
Yeah.
And so we're getting all that data and we're understanding it, which is a big thing that your team has done for a while with the telemetry system built into Windows since Vista.
Yeah, from across the fundamentals teams.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about, like, let's kind of jump into the morphology or sort of the construction of this part. I mean, this is, I'm sensing this probably runs as a service.
Yes.
Right, and obviously it has to monitor everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And you mentioned it's an opt-in thing, so the system knows that it's going to be responding to events and doing these measurements,
yes.
feeding into the telemetry system, which then shoots up data to our servers in the cloud, which then come down into Building 26 and other buildings, and you guys try to figure out what's going on.
Right. So this is all built on top of ETW instrumentation and SQIM. So we've added these start and stop points as somewhat specialized events.
Okay.
Using ETW. All
right.
And then we have a service that runs and will enable, you know, as you opt into the system, will enable the logging of these ETW events to a specific set of channels that are monitored by this service. So it will in real time look at that stream of start and stop events and figure out how to pair the two together, because you'll have maybe a start event from the start menu, and then might be some things, asynchronous thing in the background that are doing the same thing, another start of the stop event.
Like wireless reconnect, for example, right. could be going on in the background as well.
Right.
Yeah.
And so so that pairing is something that we kind of make sure that we optimize as well, so we don't have much overhead in the system. And then periodically, we will summarize that information and send that up through a SQIM packet. And so that will then just come through the normal SQIM channels and then get categorized in the back end.
So that's all anonymous.
Yes.
Right. So
of course.
So we essentially have it completely and utterly anonymized. It comes back up, and then we analyze the data, and then we look to see if there's additional things we want to do. And then David talked about escalations.
Mm-hmm.
We can then go away and essentially use some of our tools like XPerf on some of the additional data that we asked for.
Mm-hmm.
We get that additional data back, and then XPerf is one of the parts of the Windows 7 SDK. The Windows Performance Analysis Toolkit
mm-hmm.
is its formal name. We call it XPerf. There's a few other things in there as well. And using that tool and those traces, which are basically ETL files, we crack those open. We look inside to sort of see what's going on in these systems, and then we can go away and optimize. We'll figure out what the particular issues were, and then go away and drill down into that a little bit further.
Excellent.
But yeah, I mean, I'd say it's important to also talk about the tooling piece.
Yeah.
I mean, XPerf is the primary tool that we use around doing a lot of this analysis, and that's something that's out there for the general public to use as well. It's not just us here at Microsoft, optimizing the operating system.
We've shared this with our partners. We work heavily with helping our OEM partners, IHVs and ISVs. Understand how to use these tool set as well.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, when you're running Windows, typically what you're doing is you're running an application, right? So if I launch Windows, Windows 7, and I install Office on it, and all of a sudden Office is doing things really slowly, the average person is going to sort of blame Windows or just say, what the hell's going on here? What's taking so long? Why is everything frozen up?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it white? All I'm doing is, we're just trying to check my email.
Yeah.
So that goes back to the question. You offer advice to teams. And I'm not picking on Office,
mm-hmm.
don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's impressive so far what I've experienced.
Mm-hmm.
But my point is, it's a public SDK, right, as
mm-hmm.
you're saying. I can lock into this system. Can I also hook into your telemetry system and have Windows shoot up data somewhere for me as an ISV to then grab and analyze?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Cool.
But you can see the events if you want to. You can actually, as an ISV, you can actually see the PerfTrack events in there, and XPerf will surface those up to you. So you can sort of see what's going on, and then based on those events, you can see what else is happening in the system as well.
Cool.
And if you've got a third-party application, you've written something, you can see what impact it actually has, based on before and after, if you wanted to trace them, and then trace them before and then install your application, trace it afterwards, see what's it actually done to these timings. So yeah, that capability is there. Plus, if you start logging your own events, you can also see those events in the trace too, as well.
Sure.
So in some ways, it's an extensible system, and we've got a tool set. It's a pretty advanced tool set. I should be upfront with people. You need to have some knowledge of Windows internals, plus some of these key technologies. Mm-hmm. But if you're at that level, you can get incredible amounts of information around optimizing on Windows.
Excellent. Yeah.
So it's the understanding that you have to have in order to use the tools is on the level of being able to debug components in the system. And so
you've used WinDebug before. Maybe you've written some driver. You're a Windows programmer.
You need to be a Windows programmer. You don't necessarily need to be a kernel level programmer.
Okay.
But you do need to have some understanding of how the system works.
Sure.
The Windows internal book that Recivenish and company work on. if you have a good understanding of that or some other operating systems, you'll be able to understand a lot about the tools.
Absolutely. So that brings up a great point, because you mentioned kernel mode. Now, if I'm a driver writer, let's say, and we have lots of them out there in the real world, and drivers better damn well be responsive, and sometimes they do feed up information to a UI thread or whatever.
And don't grab too much memory. Sorry. We just look at all these code pages, and we see certain drivers. Well, we're going to build one driver for this whole category of devices, and we're going to just chew all this RAM.
That's a great point. Let's say I'm a driver writer, and we offer, with like the kernel driver, KDM and UDM. I really should go back and talk to those guys. I haven't talked to them for years, but do we offer this level of tooling and telemetry and diagnostics and things like that for kernel level guys?
Yes.
Perfect. And is it this tool?
Well, you can use this tool. We can use this tool to go away and debug some of your kernel-related stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of the telemetry is, we've sort of spread it out throughout the system. So I wouldn't say it's specific to kernel. A lot of it's actually user mode-based interactions.
The PerfTrack telemetry.
But you can...
So, however, ETW has user mode and kernel mode instrumentation.
Cool.
And the kernel mode instrumentation can be extended... both can be extended just by adding ETW instrumentation points. So, for instance, the digit team, the graphics team in WEX, has been working with driver vendors on adding instrumentation to the graphics drivers that allow us to understand more in depth about what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's worked out well. We have tools that allow us to understand, that there's another tool that comes with the Windows Performance Analysis Kit called GPU View, and they've extended that to really understand more about what's happening within specific vendor drivers. And so I don't know how much of the driver-specific things are actually available to third parties at this point, but it allows us to understand, for instance, power management.
And
GPU.
And that's something that we want to be efficient with, right?
Yes.
Absolutely.
is there some sort of model where you have the notion of sort of an eventing analysis and diagnostics for power management?
Do
you want to know how the system is it using too much power, or is it? Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, so there's a difference between measuring power and measuring resource utilization.
Fair enough,
Measuring the power management software. And so, in terms of measuring power, that certainly still requires third-party solutions to measure the power aspects of it. However, internally we have used that to some extent and paired the power measurements with ETW instrumentation to see at a fine-grained level what's happening. So with our CPU partner vendors, we've worked closely on both CPU power and more system power kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can be done, but that's more of a very detailed solution.
Sure.
but in terms of resource utilization, we can see what what's using the CPU, what's bringing the CPU out of a halt state, mm-hmm. where we're going into like the C states in the CPU, where they have a very low power, you know, compared to when they're running. What is causing disk I/O to occur and keeping the disk spun up? Mm-hmm. So we can see that those kinds of things very easily with the tools today.
Should also talk about the timers too, right?
Yeah,
and applications with.
Yeah, so we added the coalescing timer coalescing APIs, and that's more of a forward looking thing in the future because we still have a timer tick that's occurring periodically, but. The sub 15 millisecond timers are something that matter quite a bit. And so we've worked with several software vendors and some driver vendors.
Let's talk about that for the people who might not know why that matters.
A little bit of background, actually. Yeah.
So there's a, for the CPUs, they have a couple different ways of improving power. So one is this frequency control. So when they are running, they can run at a lower frequency and lower voltage and save power that way. And so there's some interesting aspects of that in terms of time, because you may take a lot longer to run, and the question is, for overall system powers, do you want to take longer to run at a lower power state, and is that more optimal than taking a shorter time? But those are quite challenging questions to answer in some problem domains.
Sure.
The other aspect that they have is a C state, which is when you're halted, and when you're idle, essentially, you can drop down into a lower and lower C state. So the disadvantage of dropping down to a low C state is that it takes longer to come out.
Yeah.
And the performance right after you come out may be slow because of some of the things they do to save power. So you have to measure about what state you want to go into. But basically, you want to look at how long you're going to be down, and then what latency you're willing to tolerate coming out of that. So.
Yeah, everything you've actually mentioned is also configurable too on the platform. Mm-hmm. So for us, we ship by default in the balance mode, and we've done as much work as we can across a wide variety of machines to try and set these settings correctly in terms of how long you stay down, how often you look at the particular work that's going on before you promote, etc., in terms of the different states. But a key thing is that there's millisecond timers. There are some multimeter kind of applications that want to get the timer tick to 1 millisecond. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you get it onto 1 millisecond, that affects our ability to essentially drop down into those lower power states. And so it's really easy. There's two APIs in the system where you just sort of say, set the system timer at this frequency, and bang. And that machine, if you're running at that level for a long period of time, you're having dramatic impacts on the power consumption and the battery life of the machine.
Yeah.
And all it takes is, one component to do that sort of thing to start really affecting it. So, we've had a lot of efforts. Certainly David and his team have been driving a lot of efforts around third parties that might do this sort of thing, where it might have just been a legacy application that's setting that timer tick.
A lot of code in-house as well.
We've done a lot of that stuff too.
So we have a lot of third parties right here at Microsoft.
We have a lot of third parties.
We don't think of them as third parties.
No, but yeah.
You know what I mean.
But there's a lot. And I think that as a general point, that's an important point, across the industry to be thinking about. Well, it's like, if I start an application up and I've got the 1 millisecond timer on and I'm not using that, I'm killing trees. Mm. Fundamentally, that's what I'm doing. I'm killing trees. is that really what we want to be doing?
Understood.
So, that's super important.
But, that brings up a good question in the sense that for example, I'm shuttling, right? I'm on a shuttle. I have a wireless network connection, whatever. I'm using my laptop running Windows 7 with a battery in it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
And if I choose Power Saver and I then launch an application that's basically undoes what I've chosen, that's what you're talking about, right? It's going to require using more power to run.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Is there a policy kind of thing where Windows could just say, hey, you can't run this on the power configuration you have chosen, instead of just running?
Not currently, no. We honor that application. We give that application the ability to do what it's going to do. But, the power saver mode is essentially our low power state. But the thing is, for us, the important thing is to make sure that the balanced mode, the default mode, is set up right so that we've got the appropriate responsiveness, while also being able to minimize the the power utilization when the user's not using the machine, or when the machine's essentially quiescing.
Sure.
That's the critical thing. What we don't want people to do is to go off and set high performance mode, mm-hmm. which is the other end of the spectrum, which essentially sort of peaks you out, because then you're using more power than what you need to be.
Sure. So, I mean, and I know this interview really isn't about power management.
We've really meandered, haven't we? Yeah.
But I love it. Yeah. It's great because, you know, one of the things I've noticed is I'm not sure a lot of people really understand what, I mean, I think power saver is kind of obvious. Mm-hmm. But I think when would you run at, you know, the highest power level? Well, I'm doing something with media, right? I'm running an application that's creating this interview. It's encoding this interview. I'm probably going to want to use as much power as I can. Or is that true? Why would I use, high power or whatever you want to call it?
That's a good point.
High performance.
Thank you. Performance. If I'm doing high performance computing,
you might as well sort of call it high power mode. Yeah.
High power mode. Give me an example of why I'd ever choose that setting.
So part of that is the latency. So if you're doing something that's steady state, mm-hmm. and is utilizing the machine to full capacity, then in the balance mode we'll ramp up to do that. But we ramp up over time to be able to do that.
Okay.
And so if it's very bursty workload and you want the most out of the machine and you don't care about battery life, it's plugged in, you don't care about the noise that the fans will generate, then it's a fine thing to do. However, in general, we don't see that there's much of a difference in terms of performance between the balanced mode and the high-perf mode.
Interesting.
Because we do ramp up over time. So Bill has actually kind of experienced a little bit of that, and we've been fine-tuning based upon feedback.
Yeah, because of some of the stuff that I was playing around with. It's not responsive enough. We need to change this. So we did. We took that feedback. We did more and more analysis around it. To the point now where, I believe that, the balance mode is kicking up into the right levels, giving the right level of responsiveness across the wider variety of platforms that we look at nowadays. Mm-hmm. I think that's also an interesting point, too. I mean, I think during the Windows 7 timeframe, we've looked at a much broader spectrum of systems. And if you look at what's happened in the hardware marketplace, we go all the way from, sort of the Atom tiny little machines all the way up to, very high-end sort of quad-core 64-bit machines too.
Yeah.
So we've been making sure that whole spectrum is, doing well from a responsiveness perspective. Mm. And we believe the settings, we're done essentially with the settings right now.
Perfect.
We believe the settings are appropriate. And for the most part, I'm hopeful that people don't see the need to sort of get out of balance mode.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've noticed that you've actually, from the user experience perspective, mm-hmm. have moved high performance to advanced settings, sort of, mm-hmm. Which is a good idea, because mm-hmm. I think the most average people don't really think about that until they actually are in their battery, and they can click on it and see what mode mm-hmm. they're in. Yeah. But anyway, to go back to this,
going back, we can see the power modes and how the processor is behaving.
Great.
Well, with the telemetry data, so. Yeah. We can go back and look to see if we're seeing a frequent number of traces that where we have some issues with bumping up the power states frequently or something like that, mm-hmm. and we can tie that back to policy.
Sure, because if you in your eventing system, if I'm doing one of these interactions on a machine running in low power or power saver, you're going to have to know in the telemetry data that, wait a minute, there's a reason why this might have happened slowly, because we had this kind of wound down over here and had to spin it back up or whatever. Mm-hmm. You have all that data, so you can put the power to the distance between start and stop.
Yeah. Right.
Which is,
And so we can do some modeling based upon the traces and so forth.
That's really great.
Policy improvements.
Yeah. But also, we should also talk a little bit about the display dimming characteristics.
Sure.
Sort of big things. I would also say that, Windows 7, is actually Vista and Windows 7 way more power conscious than anything that went before. Before we basically set power to max and just kept going, right? We didn't really have this notion. Mm. So from a power perspective, that's important. The other thing too is that we have the display dimming characteristics, and one of the things that consumes a lot of power in your machine right now is the display, and we've got the ability for the display to back off. You've probably seen it sort of go a little bit gray.
Absolutely.
Certainly, people, when they first see that, saying, hey, what happened to my machine? Mm-hmm. You know, that's an important characteristic, even on machines that are connected to power, that are running on battery. The fact that, you know, we are, you know, chopping out a significant proportion of the amount of, you know, power consumption on that machine. Plus, obviously, that, you know, we basically dim off the display as well after a certain period of time. Mm-hmm. But, you know, these are all important points. I mean, I'd say this has been a very high priority piece of work during Windows 7.
Absolutely.
In terms of the power management of the platform and the power efficiency.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Great job, because I mean, I know it's definitely our most efficient operating system to date that I've experienced. It's rather amazing.
Yeah, and it's, you know, all the things that we've done in the OS, I want to reemphasize that we have to work with the ecosystem, our partners, on making sure that, you know, it's very fragile. It's an open system.
Yeah.
Any component that can come in and screw up the rest of the system for the user. And so mm-hmm. we really want to, you know, be working diligently to make sure that in an open system we have the right tools, the right guidance, the right education and so forth with all our partners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's been always designed to be an open system.
Yes.
That's the idea. Windows is a platform.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, but there's the price that you pay.
Yeah.
Because if something goes wrong, it's our fault. And sometimes it is our fault.
Yeah. We have to take the responsibility for helping make the system easier to build.
Cool. So without, I mean, one of the things I think is really interesting, and I think people who have been watching the series on Windows 7 efficiency are seeing that, for the future, we're really moving to an operating system that can sort of really do a better job of maintaining itself. Letting the user know when something needs to happen without the user having to go search a bunch of websites to figure out what the hell some H result means that they saw in some weird dialogue, to allowing...
You don't like the H results? You don't have your little list on the side?
Actually, I don't. I mean, I saw one the other day. I was like, shit, excuse my language, but wait, what? But I did find it, and I used Bing also, which I was impressed, because usually I would always just go for the other guy from past experience, but Bing's kicking some serious butt. So for the future, in this realm that we're talking about today, what do you see as sort of like it becoming much more automatic in a way that you tell a user why something is taking a little longer, or you're able to self-correct? Not by writing like hot patching code, but maybe it's because there was a service took too long to start up. You could say, well, next time we'll think we know what this user does, we'll just fire it up when they start their session.
Well, it's certainly, I mean, you know, everything you mentioned are important things. I mean, it's very difficult at this point to sort of speculate about
speculation.
The big things we're going to totally invest in the future. but I mean, you know, it's pretty clear our investments in telemetry and using telemetry and helping not just Microsoft, but also helping the broader marketplace, our partners, with our telemetry investments. And also, you know, making Windows an interesting and exciting and powerful environment to develop applications on, because you know, my hope is that you're getting a lot of stuff. We already have developer portals out there where people can go on, log on, look at their crashes, look at what's going on with their code. So we're going to continue investing certainly in our telemetry capabilities and also making the platform more open and more aware of the things that are going on, so that we can continue improving the user experience on multiple dimensions. Performance is one of them. On any dimension you want to think about.
Sure.
You know, that's something that we're very committed to. I'd say the Windows executive plus the Windows organization, and thousands of us, you know, see the importance of that stuff. And Windows 7 for us has been, you know, a great experience to go through, sort of realize how much people, you know, have really, really resonated with a lot of these fundamentals improvements. So we're going to continue investing in that stuff.
Awesome. Well, great. It's great to talk to you guys. And great to meet you.
Great talking to you.
And really nice work, man.
Thank you.
Power to everybody who's been involved in this. A lot of devs writing code.
Yes.
People trying to analyze and figure out what the hell all this means. And
a lot of work.
Clearly, you guys have pulled it off.
On the fundamental systems, a lot of work with lots of teams within Windows itself, Cosdy and Wex, and our partners as well.
Right on. Thank you, guys. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.